Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I don't even know what's in the news today. I literally just woke up from a nap after we've been up since 6:30 this morning.
That's right. You had the decriminalization of psilocybin hearing this morning, right?
We did, yeah. Where New Hampshire, if this were to pass, would be the first state to pass psilocybin decriminalization through the legislative process. So Oregon has it for therapeutic, and of course they also decriminalized all drugs there.
Through the ballot initiative.
Through ballot initiatives. So it's not been done yet through actually having the legislature pass something.
So how did the hearing go?
Well, Bonnie, it was your first hearing. What was your assessment of the criminal justice committee that we sat in front of?
They asked a lot of questions, and I didn't feel like they were asking questions just to be obtuse or say this could never happen. At least only one of them was being that way, and he only spoke up one time. I feel like he maybe even felt outnumbered or something.
Was this one of the state reps or just someone who was there?
Oh, yes, the state reps.
Was this that annoying old dude?
Yes.
Of course it was.
Only the state reps can ask questions during public testimony.
Okay.
So, for listeners that aren't familiar, in New Hampshire, every bill gets a public hearing. There's 800-plus pieces of legislation every year. There's, I think, 20-something, what they call committees. Each committee's got around 20 or so people on it, and they have to hear every single piece of legislation. Professor David Nutt, who is essentially the former drug czar of the UK, came out a decade ago after he was canned from his job. He came out in favor of ending the war on drugs, which was interesting. Wish he would have done it while he was.
Why did he get fired? Because I read that today too.
I don't remember that. That's a good question.
Okay.
But
he was the one who ranked the danger to the individual and the danger to society of all manner of different substances, from alcohol to shrooms to
And alcohol
marijuana.
Was almost, I think, actually it was, I think, at the top of that list. It was alcohol and then heroin. And then cannabis was like in the middle of the list. And at the bottom of the list, the very bottom, was mushrooms. And so I pointed that out, that this is considered less dangerous to society and the individual than even cannabis, which you guys already decriminalized. So it's safer. It's therapeutic. The guy who brought up the bill, the representative who sponsored the bill, the one who created it, he told the committee he was going to give them all the studies, so they got a lot to look at, right? That there's a lot of information coming in, so I just reiterated, there's a lot of studies. The studies are growing. They're doing them on larger numbers of people. The FDA has approved these things. There was actually some interesting Bitcoin bills today.
I had heard that, but I was skeptical because I was like, I feel like I would have known about that. But
they were not
sponsored by Keith Ammon, which is a pretty good liberty guy.
Yeah, he's a free stater.
So what were the crypto bills?
Well, we ran into Keith in the hallway, because that's a thing that you can do in New Hampshire, is you just, you know, if you go to the state house, you talk to reps. I mean, unless you really don't want to. Like, you have to try to avoid them, essentially, if you don't want to talk to a state rep.
Well, that's where they work.
Yeah, they're everywhere, and they're approachable. If you want to talk to one of them, you can just walk up and introduce yourself if they don't already know you. If they already know you, they're probably going to walk up and say hello. So we ran into Mike Sylvia, the founder, the creator of the New Hampshire Independence legislation. He was there.
Nice.
He was actually introducing multiple pieces of legislation to reform civil asset forfeiture today. So there were some really good bills that were being heard, but the ones that Keith put in, and actually Bonnie and I disagree on these bills, but he was putting in legislation to, as he put it, catch us up with Wyoming. And in Wyoming, back in 2018, they passed a whole package of different pro-crypto legislation, basically. And one of the things that they allowed in Wyoming was crypto companies to essentially become banks. Usually what happens is they have the public hearings on a set of bills, like on a day like today, and then they set a date for the day when they will have what's called the executive session on those bills. And at the executive session, they'll have whatever back and forth discussion between the reps. So at the executive session, you don't get to speak publicly, but you can still come and attend it. So the public hearings, when they get the input from anybody who shows up, and then the executive session is where they discuss it, talk about potential amendments, vote on potential amendments, and vote whether or not to recommend the bill pass or recommend the bill be killed or called inexpedient to legislate. So that's going to happen probably at a later time, maybe next week, maybe a couple weeks from now. So I'm not sure when.
So if they call for the bill to pass, does that increase its chances of actually passing the whole state house?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
What they will do generally is they'll put a bunch of bills onto what they call the consent calendar, as I understand it. And that way the House can vote on these, all of the bills all at once. Like, they just put a bunch of bills that should pass on a on what they call the consent calendar. And I think they put bills that shouldn't pass on there as well. And then they vote all in one fell swoop, and they just take care of, you know, 50 bills at one time or something like that, based on what the committees say.
Bonnie, you have the story about Jack Dorsey trying to set up a crypto defense fund. Now, Jack Dorsey was the CEO of Twitter. I think he stepped down.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, very recently.
And he's, I think he's a Bitcoin maximalist, if I remember correctly, but he's
I think so.
He's it at seems least, like it.
He promotes Bitcoin.
He does.
And yeah. Litecoin, though. So.
And he runs the Square Corporation still. He's still the CEO over at Square, which is a payments company, kind of like PayPal.
They made Cash App.
Correct. And Cash App added Bitcoin purchasing, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. So it did a lot to expose new people to Bitcoin who'd never had easy access to it before. And
Cash App did it well.
Them. Yeah, they did.
Where they will actually allow you to buy Bitcoin and then transfer it off of your Cash App.
You have to go through Know Your Customer process for that, but that's to be expected from a centralized corporation.
But they didn't take the PayPal approach, which is, well, is this even Bitcoin? Because you don't have a way to prove it is or isn't, and you can't do anything with it.
Right, you can. So, PayPal's keeping it in their system and not letting you remove it from their system. So
yeah, and
no
at
idea.
The moment you can't even use it to buy from other PayPal sellers. If I remember
I think
correctly,
you can. I think you can do that, but you can't. The seller cannot take the Bitcoin out of their account.
Yeah, all they can do is sell it back to PayPal. So there's literally no evidence that there's any Bitcoin in PayPal. Correct.
And they don't have any plans for changing that or anything. Isn't it Dash that also has where you can buy gift cards with Dash?
Yeah, and I really wish I could try it out.
Yeah, because they're doing like some sort of, you get discounts or something for buying the gift cards.
Yeah,
I just always forget about it.
I am, you know, as you are, Aria, prohibited under some ridiculous bail conditions in the Crypto 6 case where the government raided our studio last year, prohibited from using crypto. So I cannot install the Dash Direct app on my smartphone and actually use it. Where they essentially have created some sort of a front end to make it easy to purchase gift cards with the Dash cryptocurrency. And you do it at the point of sale. And I was listening to Free State Live, which is the Monday night show, competes with us, that some of the Free Staters are doing here in New Hampshire.
They
now.
Really call themselves Free State Live?
Yeah. It actually came to me and said...
They said it as a joke at first, and then they tagged Ian. Right?
No. They didn't say it on there first. They actually
they didn't. Not on air. They joked about it on Twitter.
Oh, I didn't know that. What I knew was they came to me and asked me, hey, is it cool if we use the name Free State Live? And I said, yeah, of course. Totally cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do it.
Yeah. And so they did that.
No, we're going to sue you for violating our intellectual property.
I mean, it was nice of them to do that, but they didn't have to.
This from Cointelegraph says that Jack Dorsey announces a Bitcoin legal defense fund. And the fund will help to provide a defense for Bitcoin developers and will include a team of volunteers and part-time lawyers. So maybe not people who are currently getting indicted by the federal government for Bitcoin-related quote-unquote crimes.
And this is only Bitcoin-related, so like he wouldn't help out Jeremy Kaufman, who is the CEO of Library?
I don't know. Sometimes I forget that the word Bitcoin doesn't mean crypto, so I kind of read that and my brain translated it to crypto, so now I'm realizing it does say Bitcoin developers. So
yeah,
maybe
it depends who you're talking to. I mean, to some people, Bitcoin is the Kleenex of cryptocurrency, meaning that people will sort of use the term Bitcoin when they're talking about a variety of different cryptocurrencies. Sort of like in the South, you might say Coke, but you mean something else.
I haven't encountered that yet with cryptocurrency. I haven't had anyone say, hey, I want some Bitcoin and then it turns out they actually wanted, you know, Dash or something.
That's true, but some people will say Bitcoin and they'll mean Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin SV or something like that, because
there's
more than one
Bitcoin. Are you into Bitcoin? But they really mean all crypto.
Yeah.
But I don't think people say I want some Bitcoin. No, Monero Bitcoin. Yeah. According to the email, the fund's first project will be to take over the existing defense of Ramona Ng's tulip trading lawsuit against developers for alleged misconduct over access to a Bitcoin fortune. So Ramona Ng, A-N-G.
I've never heard of it. What? Something about tulips, you said?
It's in quotes. It's the nickname for the lawsuit is the tulip trading lawsuit.
Interesting. I've certainly never heard of that, but that's not all surprising. There's a lot happening in the cryptocurrency world and in the Bitcoin world.
Okay. Ramona Ng is the wife of
Craig Wright.
Dr. Craig Wright. According to CoinGeek, which is, by the way, a pro
Wait, the ex-wife?
It just says the wife. I don't know if she's an ex by now.
Because remember, her and the ex-wife were working on something. It almost sounded like they were suing Craig Wright. And I was like, wait, the ex-wife and the current wife are suing Craig Wright? How is that possible? Remember, that's when we talked about her before.
Story here is from November of 2020, so it's certainly possible that she has become the ex-wife of Craig Wright in the last year. I don't know. But at the time when this was written, and this is just, for the record, this is coming from a website that is all about Craig Wright. This is a pro-Craig Wright propaganda site. It's called CoinGeek.com.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
Craig Wright is crazy, but that's sort of a given if you've ever listened to us.
For listeners that don't know, he's the guy that gets the most attention for claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto. There have been more than one person that may have made that claim, but this guy gets a lot of attention because he will sue you if you don't agree with him.
I tend to think, you know, if Satoshi Nakamoto is still alive, there's a decent chance he's that guy in that Brazilian prison, whose name I don't even remember now. That's the most compelling story I've heard yet. But
Chris Wade agrees with that, too. He said that he looked more into it after that caller called about it, and he said he's pretty convinced now.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm convinced, but if I had to make a bet on a living person who I was aware of being Satoshi Nakamoto, that would be the person.
It would make so much sense that he was in jail.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, it raises the question of why has Satoshi never moved any of the Bitcoin? Well, either Satoshi is dead or Satoshi's in jail, or for whatever reason, Satoshi just has money and doesn't need to sell any of that Bitcoin. Who knows?
Or Satoshi is God.
Who has someone, huh?
He's God. He came into a human life form and he hasn't come back.
I see. Because there's no reason to, right? He did what he came here to do. So Jack Dorsey, in addition to setting up this crypto defense fund, he's also setting up a decentralized exchange. And one thing we neglected to mention was that he changed the name of Square to Block
recently.
Which is pretty creative.
When all of these scam coins were coming out back in 2016, 2017, there were two types of white papers. There was the boring one that you would expect a white paper to be, and then there was the one that was clearly a sales brochure being disguised as a white paper. So I'm glad to hear that his is actually a white paper that is attempting to solve a problem rather than sell a product.
Yeah, this is a strange pitch because at one point it claims that this is a permissionless system, meaning that a permissionless generally means that you don't have to ask permission to join and to participate in the system.
Right.
But that seems to only be for what they're calling the participating financial institutions. So these are entities that can offer liquidity services on the upcoming so-called decentralized networks.
Like they
banks? Banks?
That's not really clear. I mean, I presume that would be included. It says PFIs will be identified via what are called, they keep using acronyms in here, DID, which I don't remember what that one is, and VCs, which stands for verified credentials. DID is a decentralized identifier. Again, I've not read the thing in full. But
and I have one more question before you get into it. Why did they give it the same? Because I can't even remember what it is right now. TD what?
TBDEX.
TBDEX. What is that? It's such
a
bad name.
I'm going to guess it stands for the block decks, but I don't know.
We've been talking about Jack Dorsey here and Bitcoin and his, quote, decentralized exchange that is going to allow banks, from what we can understand of his scheme, banks can come in and they don't have to get permission. They have a permissionless system set up for these institutions. I think they even cited banks specifically now that
yes,
I remember.
Yes, they did.
But the average person is going to have to deal with some sort of KYC. So it's
know your customer.
Yes. So it's not at all a decentralized exchange.
It's just that the banks don't need permission from Jack Dorsey's exchange. But
that's my understanding.
Won't they eventually need permission in some way from the government? Because he can't grant them that.
Well, the government gang requires that these companies be know your customer compliant, meaning that they have to ask everybody who they do business with, who they are, where they're from, what their grandma, you know, who their grandma was, what their bra size is, you know. I mean, all these personal identifying information that is so invasive.
Some of them get ridiculously invasive.
Yeah, and then even after you've provided the information, if you send a transfer that's too much in their opinion or they don't like X, Y, or Z thing about it or whatever, they'll freeze the transaction and they'll freeze your account.
Or they just don't like your answers.
Satoshi already had the solution to the Bitcoin network getting full. Increase the block size. I mean, originally the Bitcoin network was programmed to have no block size. And then they
added
one.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
it made sense at the time to add a block size to keep
temporarily.
The network, yes. To keep the network from being overtaken by spam, essentially. So they implemented that, but yes, it was meant to be temporary. Get rid of the block size limit, and that will fix most of Bitcoin's problems.
And they implemented the block size while Satoshi was still active?
He did, yeah.
Oh, he did.
I believe he was involved in the implementation of the block size limit. But
it served a very specific function then, though. It wasn't just like, we're having too many transactions come through. Our miners aren't making enough money, which is why they continue to exist today.
Mm. I don't buy the idea that Adam Back is, that is to say, the person who runs Blockstream is Satoshi Nakamoto for the reason you brought up, Aria, because Satoshi wouldn't have created Lightning, I don't think. And secondly, all you have to do is look at the people who are funding Blockstream, and you find out that mega banks are funding Blockstream. Banks like AXA, which people in the United States have never heard of AXA Bank before, but if you're in Britain, you may know about AXA. It is one of the largest banks on the planet. It's based out of Belgium.
Have you guys ever heard of Joyce Meyer Ministries?
Yes.
No, who is that?
She's a Christian lady that my mom used to listen to. She has, like, short hair.
She's like a TV Christian
kind
of person?
Yeah, TV, but you can go to her in real life. I think she's, like, Southern.
Oh, yeah.
What about her, Sarah?
I think she's from St. Louis, Missouri. But one thing that I really appreciative of her ministry is that she's got rescue homes for the human trafficked girls all over the world. So that's really important to me because, you know, so if people want to help these homes, you know, you could donate to her ministry. Like I do a lot of times. So it's actually her website is joycemeyer.org. So she's definitely nonprofit. She's not about making money. It's a church. And then she'll also give you a free magazine. I get a monthly magazine about all the help that she's doing around the world. And I've seen stories about girls in Thailand, and she's got a dream center in St. Louis, and she's got one in Los Angeles.
Aren't you a communist?
Yeah, Sarah, I'm curious. Why aren't governments solving these problems?
Well, I mean, they do try. There's a lot of government-funded... But also,
they're not doing a good enough job, so Joyce Meyer has to step in. Imagine how much more she could do if she wasn't flying around in a $10 million private jet.
I want to clarify something here. I don't think that she should be punished for this. I don't think that it should be illegal. I think, you know, if you want to support this woman, that's your choice. If you think it's fine to support her lavish lifestyle, that's her reward for doing the good things that you think she's done, then that's fine. That's your choice. To me, it's a turnoff. I think that that kind of lavish spending on the part of a minister represents someone who maybe has their priorities a little bit mistaken.
Sure. And it's very un-Christian. You know, the whole mythos of Christianity is that these good deeds that she's doing here on earth, rescuing people from being sex trafficked or whatever, she's going to be rewarded for that in heaven. She's not supposed to get a reward for it here on earth.
That is so 2,000 years ago. Haven't you heard of the prosperity message?
I actually haven't. What is that?
Really, I'm surprised.
Have you heard of the prosperity message?
You know, asking you seriously about it.
No, I have not heard about
it. Yeah, the prosperity message is that if you give of something that you have, you actually get more back in return. That's God's math. That's God's mathematics.
In what part of the Bible did that originate? So a tech founder born in the Soviet Union is now comparing metaverse hype to the communist propaganda that he experienced as a child.
Wow.
Phil Libin is the founder of the note-taking app Evernote and the CEO of the video conferencing company Mm-hmm.
I've used their app, Evernote.
Have you?
Yeah. It's like a little note-taking app, and it works. Yeah, it saves your notes to the cloud. That's all it does.
I would rather save mine to my device. That's always the issue I have with these note-taking things. Yeah. It's like, why can't I just create a text document on my phone that just stays on my phone? But that's a minor thing.
Nice part about the cloud is if you break your phone, then you can still get back into the thing.
Yeah, I was shocked that whenever I got my into my iCloud or whatever it is account, iPhone account, it didn't save anything except my notes in my notepad.
What do you mean when the Fed stole your phone?
Yeah, and then I got a new iPhone and I tried to connect it to my iCloud account.
So they didn't even save your phone book?
Maybe my phone book.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, ideally you should have your notes saved on the device and in the cloud in order to protect it from accidental destruction.
I suppose it depends on the note, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. If it's super private, then yeah, you don't want it in somebody else's possession. From what we've read is they're selling the metaverse idea. The metaverse is, at this point, a concept that they're trying to shoehorn people into buying that doesn't truly exist in the way that it's been envisioned, right? Like, there are VR applications. There's a variety of them. They're not all games. There's some other there's one where you can paint.
Or you can go to conferences, apparently, in VR.
Right. Horizon Worlds has that. They have a conference room where you can sit in a conference room instead of being in a Zoom call. You can sit in a room with floating torsos, and have an actual, quote unquote meeting. So they're trying to basically take VR outside of the realm of gaming and mass market that in a way that is trying to pitch the idea of, oh, this will be your life. You will live in this world, and it will be better. So that's the pitch behind the metaverse. It isn't just that you can go and play laser tag or shoot somebody or play mini golf. It's that you'll get to socialize. You'll get to have your work meetings. You won't have to go to work. You'll be in the virtual reality metaverse. Need to go shopping? Just pull up the Walmart app and you can just grab virtual items off the shelf. And you'll never have to leave your house. It'll all be delivered to you.
Imagine being told, hey, there's a new style of 3D movie coming out. So you go to watch it. You're super excited. They finally have figured out the technology. And then they hand you those red and blue glasses and they say, now enjoy the movie. And that's what Meta and this metaverse nonsense is. It's taking VR technology that's gone way past those stupid red and blue glasses and it's bringing back the red and blue glasses.
That's an interesting analogy. But I did look up the numbers. According to a study done by Harris Poll in the summer of 2021, so fairly recent, they talked to 2010 U.S. adults about virtual and augmented reality. Now, can one of you define augmented reality?
Pokemon Go. It's like where you scan an environment with your phone or something like that. Amazon also has the ability to do this, and it augments that onto your screen, like it'll add a Pokemon there or let you see what a desk will look like if positioned in a part of your room or something like that.
I thought that was pretty crazy.
You used an app like that?
Well, on Amazon, it will let you see if you're looking at like furniture, it will let you turn on your camera and look at your room and see what it would look like in your room.
Wow,
it's sort of clunky though, because you can't fully make it the right angle and size and stuff?
Yeah, how does it know what the size of the room is? Facebook's quote-unquote free, and that's because you're the product. They sell you to their advertisers, and they make money off of advertisers. But now they've got an actual product. They've got hardware they can sell you. Now, of course, in video games, in the world of video games, hardware is usually sold at a very bare minimum profit, if any profit at all. They just want to get the hardware into your home so you start using it and get hooked on it and start buying the software, which is where they really make their money.
Yeah, so one of the big game consoles that released recently, I don't know if it was this generation or last generation, but they sold it at a loss.
That way, just to get people in the door.
Yeah, that way they could make the money off the software that they were selling for it. I wish I could remember which company that was.
So Facebook is basically attempting to become a video game company here.
Which is fine, but they're not calling themselves a video game
company. And they're trying, and that's because they're trying to increase the market and say, we're more. We're more than a video game. You can have a meeting. You know, like, come on in, bring all the companies. They would love to have corporations buy a bunch of, you know, Facebook Oculuses, give them to their employees and say, you don't have to come into the office. We're going to be having our meeting on Facebook or on Meta today. So you can see where they're coming from and where they see that the money is here. There's a lot of potential money, and there are millions of people who are buying these
things. Why would that be easier than a Zoom meeting or a Jitsi meeting?
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.